Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. This is a podcast where we will discuss the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Ken Williams. The opinions, attitudes, thoughts, and ideas that we discuss are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily a reflection of the actual doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and enjoy this week's conversation.
And I don't know what I was thinking. This is risky. This is dangerous. But I have a sweet daughter, my favorite.
Sweet daughter.
Allison is with us. And Justin, I don't know what I...
Sweet son-in-law.
Sweet son-in-law.
No.
It's been a minute since you've wanted to talk to us.
No, I want to talk to you all the time. It's just that you don't make yourselves available. So, a little bit of context. Happy Father's Day, by the way. I know that was last week. I wasn't talking to you.
Thank you.
You were looking at me.
I was talking to everybody else. I'm looking at you because you just happen to be right in front of me. So... In Sunday school today. Today, as we're recording, it is June 16th. Happy birthday to my brother, Scott. This is probably the only message we're going to get. So, if you're with the Come Follow Me method, but curriculum. Today, we were talking about Alma 5. Great discussion. And Allison, because of her recent travels... was without us. Recent travels without Justin. She was going to visit her sister. Well, she did go to visit her sister and new nephew. So Allison was in our ward and she was contributing a great deal to the conversation, but mostly via text message to me.
It's the best way to contribute.
Yes. So I thought, this would be kind of fun to have a conversation before they go back home. And we're going to talk about Alma 5. Alma 5 is a great passage of self-reflection. And there was a verse that caught Allison's attention. Okay, I'll take ownership. Caught my attention when Allison sent me a text about it. But no, this is something that I've thought about for a long time about what it really means. This is verse 5, Alma chapter 5, verse 5. And behold, after that, they were brought into bondage by the hands of the Lamanites in the wilderness. Yea, and I say they were in captivity. So that's the first time captivity is mentioned. But really, Alma is talking about, do you remember your spiritual change? And so verse 6, really, this is what I was thinking. And now behold, I say unto you, my brethren, that you belong to this church, have you sufficiently retained in remembrance the captivity of your fathers? And so this is an interesting question for me about why are we supposed to remember the captivity of our fathers? And Allison's comment didn't have anything to do really with that directly, but it got me thinking.
You're welcome.
So, and there goes Justin coughing.
Sorry.
Are you really sorry?
No!
No, I'm not. I probably sound a little different from the button now.
Wait, what button? What are you talking about?
Exactly.
There's no button.
There's no button.
That's right. I'll have to do some fancy editing. So, first question is, why is it important? And I don't know that this is really the foundation of the conversation that I really would like to have, but why is it important for us to remember the captivity of our fathers? Ready to go.
Great question.
History is cyclical.
Okay.
I'm actually reading a book about history, and there's three different theories of history of whether it's linear, chaotic, or cyclical.
Okay.
Depending on your position in the world and how much you've learned about history, you can view it one way or another. Chaotic is just everything happens at random. There's no pattern to it. Linear is it just happens and there's some pattern to it.
Okay.
Cyclical is it repeats.
Okay.
Kind of similar to the pride cycle. But back to the original question, of why it's good to remember is because it'll potentially happen again.
Okay. What is it important? Why is it important for us to remember the captivity? What about the captivity is it that we're supposed to do as a result, or know, or not do?
Not sure.
So this is, and a lot of times, this is not scripted. This podcast is never scripted. Can you tell?
No.
I didn't even have to do anything on that one. The thing that's interesting to me is that I think up until now, I've thought about this passage, have you remembered the captivity of your fathers, very literally. That this is a question Alma's asking. Do you remember the fact that your forefathers were held captive? And Allison sent me a text about a different kind of captivity. And I think that there are ways that we can think about captivity maybe differently. And that changes the way that we think about the Alma 5 experience, the Alma 5 questions. So I will give a couple of things that have come to my mind about captivity. Have I remembered the captivity of my fathers? And so today's Father's Day as we're recording this. And I think about the captivity of not just my father or my father-in-law or my forefathers, but I think about my own captivity. And part of the discussion that we had in Sunday school had to do with really turning over our life to God. And one of the things that has come up for me, and Marcine's in here too, so I got to be really careful what I say about her. She won't say anything probably, but I will definitely get a look if I cross lines. But one of the things that I've discovered about myself is I love being right. And not only am I right most of the time, I feel like I'm right all the time. But I thought about that in the context of the captivity that I have been in, the captivity of being right. So is that a captivity? And Allison's looking at me with a very smug expression right now. I need to start doing these videos.
You say that every time you talk to me.
I know, but I haven't done it yet. I don't have enough cameras to do it when we're all in the same room. I guess I could just put a camera right there. But you had your hand raised. Yes, Allison, you may proceed.
Thank you. Okay, so I had a thought that I actually thought during Sunday school, but I didn't speak it out loud because I was doing a lot of thinking.
And it wouldn't be a thought.
And texting and stuff. But, you know, since I am an ex-Williams, I think that things revolve around me. So I think about things from my perspective, my experience.
Now, I just want to say that this is not a Williams characteristic. This is an everybody characteristic.
But particularly strong in
the Williams family. We do have that gene it's a dominant gene in our family.
Yes.
Boy, oh boy.
Anyway, so especially as you're talking about different types of captivity, I feel like, so one of the questions they were asking in Sunday school is, what are things that hold you back from, how did he phrase that question? Do you remember? What holds you back from
turning your life over to God, kind of.
It was something like that. Anyway, and one thing that I was thinking about is, you know, before I got the help I needed for mental health, I feel like, I mean, in this context, it felt very much like captivity. I was stuck in a place I couldn't get out of without that mental without professional help.
Right.
Justin could say something to me and I just felt like he had to say it because he's my husband. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, friends would say it just because they're my friends and didn't want to make me feel bad or whatever. They just didn't want to tell me the truth is how it felt. And it wasn't until I got professional help and got on medication that helped me get over that hump that I was able to realize, oh, Justin's not saying this just because he has to live with me and he doesn't want to deal with the consequences.
Right. I just want to interject. It's professional and licensed help.
Yes. And also, that's as helpful as that is, it's going to be situation dependent. Not everybody's going to need medication. Not everybody's going to need a licensed therapist. Licensed therapists are phenomenal. I should say the ones that I know are phenomenal. Yes. I'm sure there are some mismatches.
Yes.
But
and luckily, I didn't have to go through a lot of finding the right one.
Right.
So that was good. But once I got past that, I realized that I was bound by what my brain was telling me.
Right.
And I really felt like it was true because these were my experiences and these are the things that I heard. But it wasn't accurate.
That's an interesting way to explain it, that something's true, but it's not accurate. So was it that outside perspective that helped you recognize the difference between what felt true to you and the accuracy of what you felt? I don't know if I'm asking the question the right way, but.
I don't know. I think there are a lot of factors that went into getting to that point. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, especially now looking back, it's usually easier to see when you look back. But like now I can see, yes, this is how I really felt. And I really thought this is how Justin felt about me. Or like, I felt like I was just a terrible person. Not because of anything specific I did, but I just felt like I wasn't good enough. I wasn't living up to
whatever standard you had for yourself.
Right. I was holding myself
even sure of.
Right. I was holding myself up to a very high standard that probably isn't even possible to achieve.
Right. Was that connected to scrupulosity or was that something different?
No, I didn't
say, I don't think it was scrupulosity for you.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, there might have been some cultural or religious based aspects to that worth. Right. And potentially not knowing what it feels like to know that worth or feel that worth. Mm-hmm. So you could have the people around you that say, you know, I know my worth. And you can be in the position where somebody else in the room is saying that. And you're like, well, how do you know it? And why am I not feeling that same way?
Yeah. So what's the answer?
Love everybody. I got it.
And with that, let's wrap it up.
It's hard without introspection.
Okay.
And true introspection takes time.
And it's not easy.
It isn't easy.
I think it takes courage.
Yeah.
And so my experience is, this is the comment that I would have, or one of many comments that I would have made today in Sunday school, that for a long time, I've been thinking that I'm doing okay. Got the major, you know, the big 10 commandments, pretty good on those. A lot of the little ones.
Yeah.
A lot of little ones. I'm doing right. I'm doing a lot of the right things. But I've had a couple of experiences recently where I've thought about this Alma 5 as I read through that as an example. But I've thought about, who is it that I want to be? And the questions, and we're not going to go through all the questions. I don't think that's what I want to do on this episode. But I was intrigued by this idea of captivity, remembering the captivity, but that brought up for me the question, what am I being held captive by? Now, a very easy answer is addictions. Chocolate cake is Allison signing that. I'm held captive by chocolate cake. Not eating it, because it's been a long time since I've eaten
it. But is that a captivity? I don't think it's necessarily a captivity, because that's not... I mean, when you think of being held captive, you think either you've done something wrong or there's a law against it, whereas chocolate cake you're doing for good.
Right.
So I don't think that necessarily applies. Granted, it could become an addiction where it's become your every part of your life, and True. You create a podcast and you have all these different books.
And I've made hundreds and hundreds of cakes over the years.
But I still don't think it's bad. I don't think that's...
So when I think about captivity... The addictions, if you're talking about addictions, if somebody were to say, I'm an addict or I have addictions, mm-hmm. whatever comes to mind, I don't have problems with those things. I'm not a drug user, except for the things that have been prescribed by my doctor to keep my blood pressure in check. I am a drug user for those things.
Can't sell those ones on the street, so
I can, but it's probably not worth very much.
No, that's fair.
And then my blood pressure will spike and things will be not good. But other things, I think, have held me captive. And I've really been examining this idea of, I have called it an addiction to being right. The addiction of being right, I had somebody tell me recently that it's not an addiction, it's a character flaw. But either way, it's a problem. It's a not good thing. And I've had situations where... not only do I want to be right, I'm so convinced that I'm right, I want everybody else to know that I'm right. And so I'll give a quick example. This is from several months ago. I had a boss who was not a super big Ken Williams fan. He decided that he was not impressed with my productivity, my output, my et cetera. And the story that I heard from him was inconsistent with what I thought I was doing, contributing, producing. And it really bothered me that he was missing the point on some of the things that I thought I was doing well. And I wanted him to know that he's wrong. I am doing these things. I'm not doing these other things. I'm not the horrible employee that you imagine that I am. And so I was talking to somebody about it who just asked me the question that kind of shook me loose. What do you have control over? And the answer is, I don't have control over anything outside of me. I can control my behavior. I can control my actions, my reactions, etc. I can't control what he thinks about me. I can't control how he responds. I can't control anything about him. And so then the next question is, why can't you just let him be wrong about you? And that was so hard for me to do. That's the only thing I can do, is let him be wrong. But it was so hard for me to accept that, because I'm right. I wanted him to know that I'm right and how right I am. And I've had other situations that have come up in the since then, where it felt so important to me that other people know how I'm right about something, or how right I am about something. And so I'll use that. I might come up with other examples as well as we continue our conversation, but I've thought about that in a lot of ways, and how that desire has held me captive. What am I missing out on? What am I not improving on? How am I not developing into the person that God wants me to be? Because I am so captive to this idea that I have to be right. And not only do I have to be right, but we all have to agree that I'm right.
Miss out on opportunities to see things differently.
Yeah, your focus becomes different. You're focused more on pleasing him or trying to get him to think the right way versus that inner focus that, am I doing the right thing for me versus am I doing this for him?
Right. And I think that focus is what I think that focus is part of the issue that Alma's talking about. That if we are captive to other people or to ideas or to our own ideas about our past or our abilities or whatever, then we can't become all the things that he talks about that we should become later on in the chapter, about being spiritually born of God and having his image in our countenance and all those other things. So how do we get past that? How do we uncaptivate ourselves? Uncaptive ourselves.
I think a lot of it goes back to, I guess it can be as little as having somebody that's grounded.
Okay.
That you can talk to.
Okay.
As an outside perspective. And that's just kind of the basis. Or a therapist.
Right.
Because they can look, you can talk to them for a whole hour or more if you've got the time and the money. Mm-hmm. And they can evaluate, okay, you are actually thinking correct. You are trying to overimpress this person. You are, you know, doing whatever. They can evaluate that and say, okay, this is where you're being held captive.
Right.
Versus you just kind of get stuck in your own self, and without that introspection, without some grounding to it, you just get caught up in that captivity.
I think a good place to start is just being self-aware enough to recognize that in yourself. So even if you're not, I don't know, overcoming that thought or that impulse or whatever, just knowing it's there so that you can work on it, even if it's just, you know, a little bit at a time. That's how you get anywhere. You can't do it all at once. And I mean, so the best start is just being aware of yourself and where you are and your thoughts about certain things. And I mean, trying to figure out where you want to go or who you want to become. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to jump all the way there right away. You just have to start with recognizing where you're at.
And question everything. I feel like if you don't question something, then you just kind of go along with whatever's there.
Right.
And then that becomes your norm, and that can also become your captive if you're not aware about it.
Yeah. So give me an example of what you mean by question everything.
It's hard to go and answer that question without being specific to my current situation.
Okay. So,
that's my trump card.
Perfect.
And until that situation changes, okay.
I'm going to change it up a little bit. Let's give you a pseudonym. So we're not talking to Justin. We're not Jason?
I don't think that one will work.
Oh my goodness.
You guys, Justin called you Jason a few, or not Justin, Grandma Jan called you Jason a couple times.
That's funny. So, Allison's talked about her experience that, talking to a therapist has helped her recognize that some of the thoughts that she had were not accurate thoughts. They were true thoughts, meaning true to her. They felt very real.
They were
real, but they were not accurate. They were not consistent with the outside reality. I think I talked recently about, I've talked about it, at least on social media, I've talked about this recently, but I talked about the box. This is something I heard from a good friend, Jeff. He was going through some difficult experiences, including job search and things. And he said he felt like he was in a box. He was isolated. He was... And all the things like what Allison, like you were talking about, where he felt like he was not being recognized for the leadership experience and skills that he had as he was searching for a job and was not getting the traction that he wanted. He felt like his feelings of frustration were overwhelming. His feelings of depression or anxiety were feeling overwhelming. And it wasn't until he looked outside the box and realized that there were people around him, and in some cases, very close, physically close, as well as emotionally, experientially close. And as soon as he reached out to them, he realized his experience was not, there were some inconsistencies with what he was believing and what really
what he was seeing.
Right. And so I think that holds true for all of us. I think we isolate ourselves, and even when we don't isolate ourselves, but I know from your experience, Allison, you isolated yourself because you believed that nobody could understand what you're going through, which is,
yeah,
to a large degree, that's true, because your experience is so intensely personal. You can't know what other people can't know really what your experience is. But I think that this idea, this is my very long answer way of saying that you don't necessarily need to have a therapist to have this experience. You don't necessarily need to have I think having a friend or a mentor or a coach or
someone to ground you.
Yes. Yeah, somebody who is, maybe who's been through the experience, maybe somebody whose opinion you trust and respect.
They can at least be supportive of you.
Yeah.
They can at least offer a perspective. Now, the perspective that they offer may not be quote unquote true, but I think we get so wrapped up in our minds about the idea that because what comes from our head feels so true, we think and I wish I could remember who gave the quote. There was something I read recently that you can't believe everything that you think. And I think anytime that something comes up that helps me realize that whatever I'm thinking may not be accurate, may not be true. I like your comment, Justin, about question everything. And so with this idea of being held captive, I think a good question to think about is, what's holding me captive? What am I being held captive by in my life, in my experience? For me to get from where I want to be, and this could be from any perspective, any aspect of your life, from a career perspective, from a religious perspective, from a social perspective, from a relationships perspective, what is holding me back from where I am and where I want to be? And there's something that's holding you back, and that something feels very real, and it's probably not. It's probably imaginary.
I think sometimes, I mean, at least for me, I've noticed it with Justin sometimes too, is we just need to like talk it through, mm-hmm. like out loud, and not necessarily receive any feedback, but just, I don't know, try and work it through in our own minds, but having someone else kind of, I don't know, be a sounding board. And something that Cindy taught me years ago that I love is when someone's talking to you, or I don't know, just talking about their situation, a good question to ask is, do you need validation or feedback? Mm-hmm. And because there's sometimes when you can handle feedback, and there's sometimes when you can, you right. just need someone to hear you.
Your feelings are valid.
Right.
They may not be productive.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not valid or real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm trying to figure out something, decide, like a couple years ago when I was trying to decide if I wanted to go back to work or not, I couldn't decide. And every time I asked Justin, he was like, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not, just tell me what to do. And he wouldn't. So just kind of talking through it, I talked to him and to my therapist, just here's reasons why I do want to go and here's reasons why I don't. And just kind of just talking through things. And, you know, I got some questions like, what are your goals? What do you want your life to look like? And then I was also told, like, you know, if you don't like it, you can always change it. Like, you're not
being held captive by that job.
Right.
Or that decision that you made.
Right. But, I mean, it was just nice to have someone to listen to me, even if I didn't get any feedback or any... Sometimes I just needed to hear myself say it and kind of come to my own conclusion.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have people ask questions like, what's your end goal look like, or what are you working towards, or, you know, stuff like that. So just having someone to talk to that you can trust and right. is supportive and will support you through whatever decision.
Right.
And not say, well, you shouldn't do this, or you can't do this because of whatever reason, but just right. say, if that's what you want to do, I'll support you in that and I'll be there. But yeah, having support is really helpful.
Support without an agenda. Somebody right. who doesn't have yeah. the agenda that you're going to
believe what they want you to believe.
Right. And so I'm thinking about advice. I'm thinking about, okay, so this is my experience when I coach somebody, that I have no agenda. I was talking to somebody the other day, and he's a career coach. I have a different angle in what I do. And he wanted to know, basically, are we in competition, or are we in different enough areas of career coaching that we could collaborate? And it turns out that we can collaborate. And I told him, when I'm working with somebody, I don't have an agenda for them to quit their job or stay in their job. I'm going to ask them questions. I'm going to help them understand what's important to them. And then they're going to make a decision, and I support the decision. But I'm not going in with the idea that, okay, Justin, I know what's going on in your job. You really need to stay because, or you really need to leave because. Yeah. Because then, first of all, I don't know. I only know what Justin's told me. I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't know the details. I don't know what is important to him. And as a quick example, I stayed in a job that was not good for me longer than many people would, because I had an outcome that I was looking for. And once that outcome came, then it was a lot easier for me to make some changes. So if you're talking to somebody who has an agenda, well, you clearly need yeah. to whatever, then that this I would be a little me, bit worried.
This
that.
Will help you kind of.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
And that's a lot of advice is I did this and it worked out well, so you should do it too.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, whatever that phrase is.
Yeah. Or on the other hand, I didn't do this and I wish I had, so you should do what I did. And I know that when you guys were getting married, you were getting a lot of advice from...
Sometimes a little too much advice.
Well, you guys should do this. You shouldn't do that. And a lot of it came from that mindset that this didn't work for me, and so I want you to do it, or I want you to not do it because when I did it, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Or I didn't do this, and I wish I had, so you guys really should do it. And so things like important decisions, like what kind of cake do you want? What kind of cake did you want, Allison?
No cake.
Exactly. And... what reaction we won't...
I wanted not a cardboard cake.
In cake
you set the standard way too high.
I didn't realize that cardboard was a standard of cake.
Okay. So we got to tell the story.
I was going to say, there's a very good chance your listeners that will understand that.
Sarah will know this. She was in the middle of it.
The middle of it?
Sarah was amazing.
We love
she
Sarah.
Made all my dreams come true.
She's done that a couple times.
Is she really?
True.
Well, not the incognito, but the toothcake.
Gotcha.
She's helped Allison's dreams come true a few times.
Yes.
So continue. who's going to tell the story? You are the one who hired her.
She did.
Allison. But she's got her finger on her nose. So I'll tell what I know, but I don't know the whole story.
Let's hear your version.
I know that, Sarah is an incredible baker.
True.
I didn't at first.
Okay, so you're not even part of the family.
I was going to say, yeah. This will come back into play later.
So, amazing chocolate chip cookies, cakes. She did red velvet
taco soup.
Taco soup was good.
Great.
She did red velvet cupcakes for one of my team members one time. Just amazing. So, shout out to Sarah.
She is great. I'm not bashing her in any way. I'm given the story.
But the name Jason's going to come back up in this episode. I can just sense it. So, Allison and Sarah were talking, I believe. And Allison,
Sarah offered to make me a wedding cake as Allison, her wedding gift to me.
Allison didn't want cake. She wanted pie. And
this is all unbeknownst to me. I knew that Allison liked pie is better.
So when people would say, Allison, what kind of cake? She said, none. They said, no, you're not telling the truth. What
you have to have cake for your wedding.
Everybody has cake.
Everybody's held captive. We're making full circle by that tradition of having a cake at the wedding.
Nicely done, Justin.
Thank you.
So
that's why we invited you. Just for that right there.
Just for that.
Do you have anything else we need to contribute?
No.
So Sarah and Allison hatched this plan.
schemed this plan, not hatched.
Sarah would provide.
Do you remember where the inspiration for this idea came from?
I don't.
It was for one of your birthdays. She made a bunch of chocolate chip cookies, but then she put a 9x13 pan on top of it, upside down.
Inverted over it.
And then, right. And then she frosted that to make that look like a cake.
So it looks like a big cake.
So you were kind of disappointed that you got cake for your birthday.
Because I'm not a huge cake fan either. Ironically, as the chocolate cake guy.
And, but you went to cut into it and then you couldn't cut it because it's a glass pan. And then it was chocolate chip cookies, which is like one of your favorite things.
Which is the best.
So that's where the inspiration came from.
So
you, there you have it. You inspire Allison.
One time.
Evidence.
One time.
So everybody's gathering around. We're now at the reception. Sarah has created this beautiful cake.
It's like three layers.
It was pretty big,
too. It was.
And
looked really
good. It was
good.
Like more than I was expecting. Because yes. I was expecting
elaborate.
Like the pan. I mean, maybe a little bit more than that. But
so reception comes. Allison and Justin are gathering people around. Or actually, it's probably the mothers who are gathering people around to watch them cut cake. And Justin's got the knife in his hand. And he starts to cut.
Yeah, I had to like step away because I started laughing so hard. I was like, you can just cut it. I can't do it. And he had no idea what was
going on.
So
this is not a cake. It was a cardboard shell covering. Was it covering pie or cake, cookies?
Both.
Yeah, okay. It was like one layer was pies. One layer was cookies.
Beautifully frosted cardboard
shell. It looked amazing.
It looked really good.
And so Justin, as he tells the story, says, as he was trying to cut this cake.
So when I went to cut the cake, I'm pretty sure I caught the tape.
Okay.
Well, and so,
yes, cardboard wrapped in duct tape. Yeah.
Yes.
So I go to cut into it, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like cake. Either that or Sarah's a bad baker, which I didn't want to believe because it looked great. And I was like, okay, well, maybe that's just a hard spot or, you know, a support for the cake to hold it up. I had no idea. So I try to cut it again, and it's still just as sturdy.
It's not going through.
And it's not going through. And then finally, Allison reaches to one of the, like, decorations that was on there that was like a ribbon or something, and she picks it up and lifts up the whole thing, and there's pies under. Now, the reason why I'm upset about that is because we had two receptions. We had one in Colorado and we had one in Indiana. At the one in Colorado, I didn't get any cake.
That is sad.
I was told that they would save the top layer for us and we would get it at the year or whatever, and that never happened.
It disappeared.
So I never got any of our cake.
I've got a cake in the other room. You can have
that. So I was really looking forward to it. And then when I saw it, I was like, that looks like a really good cake, which made me want it even more. I was held captive by my own expectations of getting cake.
And I remember in one of your retellings of the story is, as you're trying to cut this cake, you have this sentence go through your brain. I feel so bad for Jason.
Yes, I did.
If this is how Sarah bakes, poor Jason. So,
but there's our- the pies and the cookies were delicious.
So there's our Incognito story. Did we make our point?
I don't remember what the point was. Or did I just
take us on a tangent that got us all lost? So back to, since I don't have a really good transition, I don't have a good segue back. I think having a group or a person, somebody that you can bounce ideas off of, somebody that's not afraid to tell you, to answer your questions about things as you challenge them, as you challenge yourself. But I think some of the questions in Alpha 5 are great questions to start with. I think there are other questions that you can be prompted to ask yourself. But one of them that I love because it's gotten me to think more deeply about where I can improve is, what is holding me captive? What is holding me back? And I have realized that as I consider that, answering that question is a little bit scary, because as soon as you identify what's holding you back, it makes it harder to not make a change. Because I know, for example, that pride is something that I need to reduce or eliminate in my life. And I like being proud. I like being right about things. It feels really good to be right about things. And
there's also two different types of pride.
True. True.
There is good pride and there is bad pride, but that's beside the point.
But having that, and one of the things, and we may wrap up with the, I don't have the exact text that Allison sent, but we talked about pride and shame in Sunday school, and the instructor gave us he read a story or a poem or something about pride and shame are sisters. And Allison made the comment that not only are they sisters, but they seem to follow each other. And so a lot of times you can be proud of, and a lot of times we associate pride with positive things that you're, and what I mean by that is, because positive could be taken a couple of different ways too. But to use a financial example, somebody who has a lot of money, a lot of times will associate that with being proud. They're not humble. They're proud. But somebody who doesn't have a lot of money, somebody who is maybe, what's a good example? What's a good way of putting it? I think anytime you tie your identity to anything false, that's pride. And I don't know if I believe that yet, because that just came out of my head. I don't know. I haven't had time to think about it yet. But, and here's the thought that came to me earlier today, and you can tell me that I'm right or wrong. You can dispute or you can support. But I, for a long time, had, because I was working nights, I had as a part of my identity that I was tired and grumpy. I was sleep deprived. And that was my identity. That was, people would ask me questions about, how's life? Well, I'm tired and grumpy. How's your job? Well, I am sleep deprived. That was my identity. But that's not a true part of my identity. And I think anytime you have an identity or an aspect of your identity that is not based on truth, and when I say truth, I'm using capital T truth. I'm not talking about your experience in the moment. I'm talking about how God sees. I don't think God saw me as tired and grumpy, sleep deprived all the time. I think he saw me as something better than that. So pride is when I tie my identity to something that is not true. And disconnecting from that is uncomfortable, because what's my new identity? If I'm not going to be tired and grumpy, what am I? And all my jokes, all my stories, all my everything was all relying on me being tired and grumpy. And it's, I think that's all part of the process. I think that's all part of the Alma 5 process of becoming spiritually reborn of God, that we see, okay, here's something that I am not where I want to be. And here's where I need to improve, change, progress. And we make those iterations as we move closer to our true nature, our true identity. Agree, disagree?
Agree.
Okay. It's hard to have a discussion if you agree with the stuff that I say.
I think...
Not a discussion. I'm not talking about... I'm saying argument.
Right? Yeah. A thought that came to my mind is over the past 3-4 months, I think, I've been writing in a journal one good thing that happened during the day, one bad thing that happened during the day, and one thing that I learned from that day.
Okay.
Just to kind of reframe my thoughts and try and get a better idea of where I'm at, what I want, where I'd like to improve, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's helped me at least to kind of create that introspection of, well, was there anything good about today? Was there anything bad about today?
Right.
And there are some days where, you know, the good thing was I came back from work, or the bad thing was I couldn't think of one. Mm-hmm. So it helped me a lot to kind of really rephrase and reframe how things are going in my life. And without that time to think about it, I would have just continued what I was doing. And it's the little steps that can create bigger bigger accomplishments.
I like that. Any final thoughts, Allison?
I just think it's important to acknowledge both the good and the bad. You don't have to, I don't know, if you're having a rough time, you don't have to just focus on all the good to drown out the bad, because that's just
positivity.
It's just a band-aid. It's
not
going to help you get anywhere. But if you acknowledge, I really struggled with this today, that can help you maybe readjust and get to where you want to be, or I don't know, even just it's just kind of, I don't know, validating to allow yourself to recognize that there were things that didn't go the way you wanted them to. It's not wrong to think about or acknowledge that things weren't all perfect all day.
Which raises a new question for me that we're not going to talk about. But I did make a note, and this is, I'll probably address it. It really is a good fit for my other podcast, my Bad Boss podcast, about when you talk about things didn't go right. How do you know? How do you know they didn't go right? They didn't go the way that you wanted, but how do you know that that's not right? So there you go. That's the question to ponder on for the next few days. I'm going to try and make this work. I don't know how it's going to work out yet, but I've got a friend who I reached out to her about some other things. She reached back out to me and had some comments about forgiveness. And we've been kind of leading up to forgiveness, as Annette and I've talked about different things. And so I think next week we're going to have a conversation about forgiveness. So I'm looking forward to this. If we don't do it next week, we'll do it soon, hopefully. But there's my thoughts about Alma 5 and what are we being held captive by. So there you go. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week, probably.
Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. Please like, share, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas, and you can reach out to me at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider, who do you know who needs chocolate cake?